You're listening to Home Planet on Radio 4. Now, don't forget our website, where you can find more information on some of today's topics. Useful links as well. Log on to bbc.co.uk/radio4/homeplanet. Well, with me today are three people who are very welcome. The science writer, Dr. Lynn Dix, the forest ecologist, Dr. Nick Brown from Oxford University, and the biogeographer, Professor Philip Stott from the University of London. Well, we start today with a topic that the media seems to have gone rather quiet on, but which you, the Home Planet listener, are still very much interested in: genetically modified crops. Perhaps it was the proposal earlier this month by the European Commission to allow a slightly higher percentage contamination of organic crops by GM that caused a sudden flurry of letters and calls. An email from Jean Simpkins, who lives near Plymouth, caught our eye because it gives us the opportunity to take stock of the GM debate here in the UK.
I've heard nothing recently about trials of GM crops. Are any taking place? And what is the government policy, please?
Lynn Dix, it's nearly 3 years now, I think, since the UK's farm-scale evaluations came to an end. It does seem to have gone very quiet, hasn't it, on the GM front?
Yes, Richard, I think it has gone quiet. The farm-scale evaluation results were published at the end of 2003, and they were taken into account by the UK government, who made a statement of their position in spring 2004. They studied three crops. They studied oilseed rape, and they studied fodder beet and maize, all of which were genetically modified to be tolerant to herbicides. And the results were, very simply, that genetically modified oilseed rape and fodder beet were bad for wildlife. In the genetically modified fields, there were fewer weed seeds, there were fewer bees, fewer butterflies, and so less food for birds and mammals. On the other hand, in the herbicide-tolerant maize fields, the GM appeared to be better for wildlife.
Did they establish why there was this difference of results then? What was it at play here?
It's all to do with what you're comparing it with. The herbicides that are used on conventional crops, in the case of maize, the herbicide being used on the conventional crop was known as atrazine. It's now been phased out. It was very effective and sprayed often. So on the GM crop, the sprays were less effective. Oilseed rape, if you've ever walked around the countryside, you will see that an oilseed rape field has lots of weeds underneath it, flowers, bees, butterflies and so on. So when you can spray that crop with a very broad spectrum or very effective weed killer, you get a lot fewer weeds in those fields. So at the beginning of 2004, the European Union lifted its five-year moratorium on GM commercialisation. In March, the UK government came out with a statement which said it had taken into account the public debate. It was going to oppose EU approval of the beet and the oilseed rape varieties which were used in the trials, but it would approve of the maize when the applications came in, as long as there were strict restrictions on herbicide use.
And yet, Philip Stott, no maize grown yet, huge opposition to GM in Britain.
Yes, but I think that there is evidence actually of a slight shift to some degree of acceptance, but that may reflect what Lynn and you have just described. As you know, it's not been in the press very much, it's declined in public interest recently.
But certainly when the trials were underway, many attempts were made to sabotage them, weren't they?
There were both sabotages taking place, but also there were attempts to kind of debase the science that was being done. People were trying to prejudge the trials, and yet the trials came up, with all the difficulties, with some very clear results, as Lynn has described. What I think is very important to grasp is things outside the UK have gone on a great deal, and I think it's important to stress that. And one thing we must remember is that at the moment there is a big battle at the World Trade Organization between the EU, of which we of course are part, and the US, Canada and Argentina, and the decision on that battle is tomorrow.
Let's just get clear first though, what GM production then, Lynn, is and isn't allowed in Britain now?
There are no GM crops approved for commercial growth in the European Union, apart from one variety of maize, which is grown in five European countries, Spain, where it's grown most widely, and that is resistant to something called the corn borer, which is a pest which we don't have in this country. It's also, that maize is not on sale in the UK. It's made by Monsanto, and they said they weren't going to sell it in the UK. So there are no GM crops in the UK.
We can't be 100% certain about that. Funny, because actually there is a loophole in the regulations. Because if you ask for a sample package and do a trial, you actually don't have to tell your neighbours or anybody about this one maize of MON810, because that was actually regulated earlier and is in an EU catalogue of seeds from pre-1998, and it can actually be used. I don't know whether anybody's doing it or not, because I won't see any purpose in doing
so
it.
So that was approved.
There is a little loophole.
That was approved, that variety was approved before this whole issue became so politically heated.
Correct.
It would have had to re-win approval, I'm sure, because there are lots of varieties that were approved before 1998, yeah, including many of the ones that were used in the farm scale evaluation.
Well, you can still do it for a sample, but
win that approval.
But if it's ever coming on the market in any way, then the whole business of transparency under EU legislation must be apparent in where it comes. But it could be fed to cattle without you knowing, actually.
There are a large number of varieties of GM crops that are approved by the European Union for import or for use in animal feed and food products, like cottonseed oil, rapeseed oil, soy products.
Now, where does the UK stand? Because you mentioned that other European countries are growing GM crops, yeah, albeit perhaps for fodder. Why aren't we taking it up here?
Well, it is a bit worrying from my point of view. You see, the increase in world hectareage in 2005 has been an 11% increase to 90 million hectares worldwide now. That's 10 million farmers. 21 major countries now grow GM. And as Lynn said, that includes a swathe of some quite unusual EU countries like France and Germany, which you wouldn't normally expect. Czech Republic and Romania are outside that as well.
I think a lot of people listening to this, Philip Stott, will be very glad that we're not taking up GM.
Well, I think what you've got to be careful about are the different GM generations of crops. I've never been particularly keen myself on this particular first and second generation because I'm not sure it suited British agriculture that much. However, be very careful when the third and fourth generation crops come in, cholesterol reducing, for example, or GM potatoes that Ireland is now experimenting with, from which you can make paper. That may do something very unfortunate for Britain. It may put our agriculture at a great disadvantage again. Once again, we're behind. Just remember,
Lynn,
in 1990...
Let's bring Lynn in here. Hang on one second.
In 1990, we had more scientists virtually than any other country who were experts in this. A large swathe of this have now been lost and gone abroad.
Genetically modified potatoes for paper production? What do you make of that?
Well, I think we have to be very careful because the problem crops are the ones which are herbicide tolerant, because those involve spraying large amounts of herbicide and more intensive herbicide use than conventional agriculture, and so they are bad for biodiversity. When you have insect-resistant GM crops, it's not such a clear-cut issue because you may have to spray less pesticides and the toxin is more targeted to the insects that are eating the crop. There is another thing I'd like to mention, which is the risk of gene flow from the GM crops to wildlife. There has been an estimate that if you planted GM oilseed rape in this country, there are 32,000 hybrid plants a year of a plant called wild turnip, which is a relative of oilseed rape. So that gene in an oilseed rape plant would get out.
Nick Brown, let's bring you in here because we've been talking about commercial crops, maize, yeah, oilseed rape, the like. What about trees? Could we use GM there?
We certainly could. I mean, we foresters are centuries behind the farmers in terms of actually breeding our crop. Agricultural crops, of course, have been manipulated by humans for thousands of years. And trees, we're really still pretty much using the wild varieties. And so there are enormous gains that could be made, even by conventional tree breeding, in improving the yield and improving pest resistance and in making the products that trees give us more suited to their end purpose.
Why has the uptake then been so slow? That seems to be that way.
Yeah, I think part of the problem here is that GM is quite an expensive technology and it tends to be applied to those crops that produce big returns. And you can see that from the sorts of crops which, you know, Lynn and Philip have been mentioning have been the target of this sort of work.
Also, trees take 40, 50 years to grow. But can you explain what benefits could GM bring then? What would it bring to the industry?
Okay, well, one example might be some of the work that's being done in the US at the moment looking at reducing lignin in trees. Now, lignin is a compound which trees naturally produce in order to repel pests and to increase their structural strength. But it has a problem for the paper industry in that that lignin has to be broken down in order to release the fibres that make paper. And in order to break that lignin down, we have to use a lot of very caustic chemicals, which then cause a huge pollution problem. Now, genetic modification has already made some steps towards reducing the amount of lignin that trees produce and also reducing the sort of cross connections between lignin within the cellulose of trees and reducing the difficulty with which that is broken down into fibres.
Lynn Dix, could you stomach a huge forest of genetically modified trees?
I'd have to be very wary about how those trees were going to be managed and what the effect would be on non-target insects or other organisms, about the artificial genes escaping into the wild environment. The next big issue in the UK field with GM is going to be whether GM can coexist with organic or conventional agriculture.
Well, finally, a question for all of you. GM in Britain, does it have a future?
I think if it doesn't in the next 20 years, it will actually be bad for British agriculture. I would like to see GM, precisely the opposite of Lynn, working with organic agriculture. In other words, GM and organic together could bring the best of both worlds.
Nick?
I think the technology has outstripped the debate about the ethical issues, and we need still to do a lot more talking.
Yes, people clearly aren't for it at the moment, it doesn't seem.
If we do have it in the UK, I hope that we have a compensation scheme in place which GM farmers have to pay for.
Well, look, I'm no doubt that lots of you listening to that will want to write in or email us. We'll have plenty of correspondence on this. So do get in touch. You can send us an email, home.planet@bbc.co.uk.